Welcome to Miller Kane, A True and Exact History, a serialized novel by Samuel Ligon, published for the first time in The Inlander and broadcast by Spokane Public Radio. Miller Kane is made possible by Sprint and The Inlander. Previously on Miller Kane, Miller and 8-year-old Carlene Callahan are on the road in an old motorhome exploring Washington's Olympic Peninsula. Meanwhile, Carlene's mother, Lizzie, is in jail for shooting Carlene's father, Connor Callahan. Miller is doing his best to look after Carlene while hiding her from Connor, who recently learned that Carlene will inherit the Callahan family fortune. Now, here's author Samuel Ligon.
Chapter 2, Part 3. They drove to Port Townsend in 4th of July traffic and checked into their hotel, a smelly, crumbling Victorian a block from Sirens, the only real bar in town. French doors in their room opened to a deck where you could watch ferries come and go and see Mount Baker and a line of cascades all the way down to Rainier, if there wasn't any smoke, which there was, not that you could see it. You only knew it was there because you couldn't see the mountains. The deck was a perfect place to have a beer and a cigarette if you still smoked, which Miller did not, though he reserved the right to take them up again if he lived long enough. They got a pizza at Waterfront and took it to Fort Worden. Everyone in town was there, the parade grounds across from the old officers' houses jammed with cars and a couple of hot air balloons going up and down. They ate their pizza on the commons, far from the stage, but they could still hear the awful folk music. Carlene watched the kids running around them. "Go on," Miller said. "I'll stay here." He kept an eye on her as she ran with a group of girls toward the schoolhouse. No way could Connor know where they were, though Miller kept mistaking people for the idiot. Up the road, past the hostel, was Artillery Hill, ringed by old batteries and bunkers facing the Strait of Juan de Fuca, to defend Seattle and the Puget Sound from a naval attack that never came. Now you could crawl around the bunker system, and if you were in high school, have sex and smoke weed and ignore your future, all with a stunning view. When he was a kid, Miller's dad told him he could ride one of the deer that were everywhere here, if he could catch one. But when it seemed like he might, that's how tame they were, his mom told him his dad was just being cute. Miller followed Carlene and her friends toward Alexander's castle. The girls ran around a big madrona tree, then up the lawn, stopping in front of the cottages. A man called to one of them, and Carlene looked around until she spotted Miller, then waved to the girls and ran toward him. "There's a pie-eating contest," she said, "and face-painting. Let's do it all," Miller said. As they walked back to the commons, he couldn't shake the feeling that they were being watched, followed. There were a couple thousand people here. Of course eyes would land on them. But he kept looking back for Connor, for Hefner, for a shooter, which is why he had to stop doing what he'd been doing these last 3 years, making him imagine shooters everywhere he went. While Carlene got her face painted, a man on stage started a Skip James song, "I'm So Glad." The guitar part was hard and fast, and the dude was hitting it note for note as he sang, the song picking up speed through its repetitive verses. "I'm so glad, I'm glad, I'm glad." The guy almost too good, too much like Skip James. "I don't know what to do, don't know what to do, I don't know what to do." This was the great version from 1931, almost exactly, except clean. None of the noise from that brilliant old recording. Carlene was getting a unicorn painted on her cheek. It was after 8 o'clock, but this far north, the light would linger past 10. Miller wanted to get close to the stage to see how this guy was doing what he was doing. "How much longer is this going to be?" he asked the teenager painting Carlene's face. "I want another unicorn," Carlene said, "if we're allowed to have two." "Sure," the teenager said. "Maybe 10 minutes? "I want to watch this musician a minute," Miller said to Carlene. "Don't move from here, okay?" He worked his way toward the stage. He'd never heard anyone play like this, except Skip James. But it didn't feel like imitation. The guy was putting everything he had into it, and he was still picking up speed, still nailing the high, fast riffs. Miller got closer, wove through the crowd. "I'm tired of weeping," the dude sang. "Tired of moaning, tired of groaning for you." And still he sped up. From a distance, the guy even looked like James. Up close, he looked exactly like James, slim and strong-featured, a broad forehead over piercing green, almost translucent eyes. No one else had those eyes. But Skip James had been dead 50 years. Miller looked back, couldn't see the face painting booth. Maybe Skip James had a son, and this was him, or a grandson. He wanted to stay and watch, but he couldn't see Carlene. He made his way through the crowd, not quite running, and when he could see the booth, another kid was in the seat. No sign of Carlene. He started running. What a fool he was to leave her there when his only job was to keep her safe. She was nowhere. And then she was 10 feet away with the girl she'd met earlier. Jesus, he'd never let her out of his sight again. Skip James started another Skip James song, Hard Time Killing Floor Blues. Carlene watched him approach. "The pie-eating contest is in 10 minutes, she said. "Okay," Miller said, "but let's watch this guy play for another minute." "We have to register," Carlene said. "We might be too late." They stood in line in the pie tent. A contest was going on, people paying to throw pies at local politicians and other prominent community members. Carlene requested a fork when she registered for her event, and the woman told her she'd have to keep her hands behind her back during the pie-eating contest. Carlene said, "I don't want to do it like that." "But those are the rules," the woman said. Carlene shook her head. "We can also just get a piece of pie," Miller said. "Sure can," the woman said, pointing, "right over there." "I want to do the contest," Carlene said. Miller paid the woman, and Carlene got a bib with a number on it. Skip James went into Devil Got My Woman. Carlene was led to a long row of tables and given a seat. There were only a dozen or so competitors. "I'd rather be the devil," Skip James sang. Announcements were made. Then the contest started, with all the competitors sticking their faces into the pies before them. Except for Carlene, who put her face down and nibbled at the crust, wrinkled her nose, and sat back up watching her peers smear their faces with filling. "Go ahead, honey," an old lady said to her. Carlene ignored her. She smiled, though, and watched the other kids. A 12-year-old boy won. "That crust wasn't any good," she said to Miller once it was over. "Let's go buy a couple pieces in the tent," Miller said. They got slices of huckleberry, blackberry, gooseberry, then walked toward the water. Skip James was done and another nightmarish folk ensemble was playing. "This crust is pretty good," Miller said, and Carlene said, "Not as good as yours." "Or yours," Miller said. They sat on the lawn to wait for the fireworks. Their first day together had been a good one. Then he saw Connor through the crowd in a blue polo shirt headed toward them. Jesus Christ, the man wouldn't do anything here, would he? Miller looked for a way out. He didn't want to scare Carlene, didn't even know if she'd want her father to be back and looking for her. Maybe she'd be happy to see him. Miller shifted around to block Connor's view of Carlene. His heart was going. Would the idiot have a gun? But when he looked back, the man was gone. Then he appeared again, heading away from them. But the blue of his shirt seemed more purple. Or was that a trick of the light? Maybe the man wasn't Connor at all. Maybe he was just some dude. And the blues player wasn't Skip James. He just looked and sounded exactly like Skip James. "I love fireworks," Carlene said. "Mom says they represent bombs and war, but I think they're beautiful exactly as themselves. I don't think they have to represent anything." "You're right," Miller said. "Things can be just what they are." But he kept his eye on the guy who maybe wasn't Connor, just in case, and on everyone else, too.
You've been listening to Miller Kane, A True and Exact History, a novel by Samuel Ligon, published in weekly installments by The Inlander, with archived audio at SpokanePublicRadio.org/MillerKane. Our theme music is by Indian Goat. I'm your producer, Chris Messini. Join us next week for the latest episode of Miller Kane.